Press the button. And away we go. Ahoy!
Welcome back to Mercury Theater Podcast. We've been busy with the upcoming season of our audio drama episodes, but in the meantime, as promised, we're bringing you my interview with the creators of October's Children. Hopefully you've had the opportunity to listen to the rest of their season one. If not, go find it right away. You know, after this episode, of course. As a heads up, when I spoke to them, I was a little under the weather, but as you might be able to tell, I've gotten a tad bit better since then. Anyway, here's my conversation with Jacob Mandel and Derek Valen. So,
don't turn that dial.
So I am talking with Jacob Mandel. Hey, Jacob.
Hello. I've been told that I should express gratitude and that my eyes are full of tears at the honor of being on this podcast. Thank you so much.
Was
that right? Did I do that right?
Now do it like you're falling off a cliff.
All right. Yeah, I'm actually directing this episode. And then
what's my motivation here?
Gratitude.
I am also talking here with Derek Valen. You've heard his voice. Hi, Derek.
Yo.
Yo.
That's it.
All right. That is it. You're not tears in your eyes. Oh, yeah. You're all out of tear ducts.
All out of tear ducts. Yeah.
Right. All right. So Jacob, I am under the impression that you are the writer and the director and everything for October's Children. Is that correct?
I am the writer and the director. I am hardly the everything, however. Have Derek, and Derek makes up the other half of the behind the scenes stuff, and he is very, very talented. Just ask him.
Derek, is that true? Are you the everything else?
Like 60-40.
It's
60% me, 40% also me. Yeah.
Of the everything else.
Yeah.
As far as working together in collaboration, how closely did you two work together as far as the post-production? So once directing is done and everything, how closely were you two involved with the audio design, like, together, or was that just Derek?
Well, first I'd like to say that Derek actually does, you know, sit in with us when we're doing the recording, and he offers notes probably not quite as often as I do, but he's in there in the trenches helping us get the best performances out of the talent, and they are incredibly talented, so we're very lucky in that regard. And then on the other end, I also do help him with the sound stuff. Mind you, I do not know how any of the sound stuff works. I can just listen to the clip he'll send me and I'll say, no, this has to be a half second sooner or a half second later, or the crunching sounds too dry, we need wet crunching, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think the only things that Jake and I do that are entirely independent of each other is when Jake writes the show, I have almost no involvement in it. And when I make the first rough draft of the episode, Jake has no involvement in it. And then anything in between, when it comes to show stuff, we're usually working on it together in some capacity.
Yeah. So actually, I am curious as to the whole process. So going from the start, obviously I'm fairly certain that your show starts, October's Children, starts with the writing process and then go from there, or start it wherever it makes sense. Jacob.
Well, I had this kind of strange friend named Derek who said, I'd like to make a podcast. Who wants to make a podcast with me? And I said, I would. And so I submitted a thing and he accepted the proposal. And so now he's the producer and I'm the writer and the director. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I then wrote up the first full episode and gave it to Derek for perusal. And from there, I think we went to casting, right?
Yes. Then we sat down because you had, part of the original thing was you needed to give me like characters that we could be casting for. So then we put out our casting call. We reviewed every single audition a lot to really focus down to get our cast members. And then once we had, I think pretty much everybody, then we set recording dates for things. So it's get the cast, schedule a time for everyone to try to be in the same place, because we do live directed sessions where Jake and I will sit in and go, yes, that was great. Or no, that was great, but can you do it like this? And yeah.
So right, there was the pitch, and then there was the script, and then there was the casting. And the casting, Derek used an online platform to do, and we had over 400 submissions. We were really, really lucky to have so many great folks turn out.
So where are these submissions taking place?
So we used Cast and Call Club for the first thing, because that's what I had. It was free. That was immediately what I was drawn to, was the freeness of the program, because while Twitter generally gets nicer results or has a potential to reach more people, we just didn't have any online presence to get it working. And mm-hmm. I didn't have the experience to like know who to ask on Twitter to get a casting call retweeted. So
there was another platform involved too, though, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
23 or something.
Yep. When for some of our harder roles to grab, like some of our more accent heavy, like Mrs. Castellanos was a really big, like, we need Eastern European, we need Greek-ish, we need like a very specific tone for this. So searching on a paid casting site gave us a different like pool of people to choose from. It was just a matter of trying to work within budgets, because once you get on those paid sites, it's like people were quoting me what they thought they should get paid for the project, and I didn't agree.
Hold on. Well, also you have a budget.
We want to be clear. We firmly believe that the cast should be paid for their work and should be paid a fair wage. It was a matter of, we don't have the budget, they are not worth the money.
You'd have to be. If I was paying the entire cast budget for just you, I'm like, this got to be amazing. This better be amazing. I better love this every second, every day.
Have a Welcome to Night Vale vibe. Have just one narrator for the entire story.
Yeah. For that money, it better just be Cecil Baldwin. That better be it. Like,
yeah. Yeah. So I'm gathering by this that this was not recorded in person then.
Oh, we live in New England, and when we started recording stuff, we're like, well, we have people that are coming in from all over. I think that I had seen from my previous podcast project how online recorded sessions could work for this. So I was like, we want to get the biggest amount of people that we possibly could for our audition. So we had someone from Bangkok auditioning. We had people from like West Coast. We had people from East Coast. One of our cast members, the guy who plays Jeff Tremblay, his name's Paul Warren, lives in Edinburgh. So like, yeah, we have people from the United Kingdom that are voicing these things. So that was just, the hardest part is just getting the schedule. And that I think has more to do with the fact that we have 15 cast members than we do about different time zones. So.
Yeah, with such a large cast, it is difficult to get them all in one room, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We usually try to break it into scenes. So we just ideally want the people who are in a scene together to be able to make some kind of scheduling, because that just gives you something to go off of. Because I'm always worried if you're just sending me lines, well, when I critique them, because I'm a monster who will not do that thing. It's just a pain in the butt if I have to email you back 100 times because we want like a slightly different take or a different tweak, or because the audio wasn't quite here. Or because you took this line with this inflection because you interpreted it this way and the other person in the scene did it a different way. And now when you put them together, it just doesn't sound good. So,
yeah. Jacob, is this your first foray into the audio drama sphere, or is this something that's old hat for you? Where do you stand?
Somewhere in the middle. I've written things like it for other projects, but the focus of the project was never the audio drama. The audio drama, the sort of audio component was an add-on or an Easter egg or something like that. So for me, this is the first large-scale audio thing I've done, certainly.
Yeah. Have you
primarily?
Have you listened to other audio dramas prior to making this one, or is this just from scratch?
Oh, I am a longtime fan of audio dramas. Big shout out to Dakota Ring Theater for getting me in to the habit, you know.
Yeah. They did,
Blackjack Justice is phenomenal, as is The Red Panda. I mean, like, just lots of other shows too. Knife Point Horror is great. Pseudopod, but that's not really an audio drama. That's sort of a audio fiction kind of a thing. Either way, yes, I am a big fan of audio dramas. I think it's a wonderful medium.
Yeah. Well, cool. Derek, do you have any familiarity with audio dramas aside from October's Children?
Not really. I
I can go back to listing more of my favorites if you want. No.
Derek's lying.
Well, I mean, so podcasting for me was a kind of new thing. When I started work on Fast Times at D&D High, I had never done anything like it. I'd only done some audiobooks and some like music recording. So like, hey, I'm familiar enough with the editing process to know how to make something, but I don't understand like the full thing. Even listening to podcasts in general was something that didn't really exist for me before the pandemic. And it was because I started working on one and was like, I should probably like start listening to this stuff so I can learn how that should be sounding. So that was my crash course into figuring it out. And then moving from a TTRPG setting to a audio drama was nice. It was nicer. I didn't have to, everything was scripted now. So I was like, yeah, the episodes are 4 hours long. Also, yeah. But that was, you know, me listening to audio dramas follows whatever, you know, I listen to whatever project I'm working on. I generally think I like audio dramas better because I just appreciate the narrative, and I'm often looking for horror, and there's just a plethora of like sci-fi and weird fiction and horror shows that I can try out, and they only take 30 minutes to listen to, so I actually have maybe time to listen to one now and then.
Yeah,
sort of.
Now, do you find it more satisfying after the fact to be a voice actor or to do the post-production of an audio drama?
I think I like the post-production thing better. It, don't get me wrong, whenever if I have an opportunity to voice something, I can just like do it and then be like, hey, it's your problem now. Like, I'm just gonna walk away from this. That sounds terrific. It's a very like large satisfaction from polishing something down and just like having all the control with it and making something neat using noises and vocals and music and stuff. So yeah, apparently I just like doing the editing an awful, awful lot.
To let people get a better idea. So in Universe 25, Derek Valen was also a huge help in the audio, like the post-production side of things. Mm-hmm. And that was fantastic. He did such an amazing job.
I just like doing it, and I'm sort of fast at it. That works.
Yeah, that helps. So the storyline of October's Children, where did that concept come from, Jacob? Or did that, or how did that all come about? And I'm not asking for the storyline, just like how you came about bringing that up.
Well, I am a long-time horror aficionado. And, you know, I grew up in New England. So together, we have a very long history of, I mean, everywhere does, but New England has a history of things like, or writers like, ranging from, let's say, Lovecraft all the way through to Stephen King and such. And so the area is just kind of steeped in that. And I remember there were a couple of books I read when I was younger about local folklore that stuck with me. And then, of course, in my earlier years, I was inundated with media like X-Files or Silent Hill and all that kind of thing. And a lot of it just stuck with me. And I think that there's a lot to be done when you take a group of interesting characters and put them in a very difficult situation and then just put it in a small town. And I think that that's kind of how everything sticks together.
Yeah, it definitely seems like some of the books that I've read as a kid. And you have that small town, New England, but then you have this entity, whatever that might be. But actually, speaking of the entity, how did you make the sound design for the monster? What was your inspiration? Because you're looking at the script that says monster growls or something, right? And then that's you have to figure out how
that's
to,
that's the sound design exactly. Yeah, I mean, so that is a lot of, well, you know, like, I don't remember what our first thing was, but I know we changed, and a lot of it's like using sound libraries to see what's there. I think that we knew that we didn't want it to sound too bestial. Like a lot of effects for that are like heavy breathing or very like mammalian, like grunting, and I don't think that's what we liked at all. So Jake kind of pitched me the general idea for the thing. He's like, this is our creature, kind of imagine it like this. So I was like, okay, alligator noises are a really solid base for monster noises. Like, it's not, if you're not growling, there's probably some kind of reptile like thrum in it. And then I really wanted to find ways to make it sound a little more alien, a little more cybernetic, a little like, I'm trying to find ways to describe it without like describing the entire thing. But yeah, so like finding things that were less identifiable. Like when, you know, if I listen to this and I just hear, I'm like, I don't like that. That's
right.
That sounds too mammal to me. So instead I want something that sounds foreign and that I can use things with. So like the higher pitched noises, the little, like, I don't know, it sounds like skin flaps to me. When I listen to it, I'm just like, yeah, that sounds gross. That sounds like some weird vibrating membrane. That's cool. So yeah, we just pitched a bunch of things, and then we tried to find something in a sound library that could have as much of that together. And then, yeah, then it's honestly just a matter of like, okay, when we have our final project, when we have our final noise, can we pick apart the elements to that and then use those elements for other monster, like for making the monster do more than just yell at people. Right now, it normally just yells at people.
Yeah. Jacob, when you're listening to it after it's all said and done, how do you feel that the monster sounds in accordance to what you intended it to sound?
Oh, I think Derek did a great job.
Jacob wouldn't let me put the episode up if he didn't. He was like, no, that's not quite. Part of our, like, our final process is literally sitting in a call, sharing a screen, and just listening to the episode, and then just stopping every time something's like, didn't really want this sound. Maybe this be different. Let's try Googling something else.
There was a harrowing 2 hours where Derek and I disagreed on what the monster's footsteps should sound like.
Yep, because we had never really talked about the size. And so, like, I'm like, okay, so episodes like 1 through 4, I'm just like, I'm putting in the foot noises. And then I'm like, okay, cool, I got this real big, like, lumbering thing. And Jake's like, well, it needs to be a faster thing. And I was like, ooh, well, about that. So then we compromised on just like, okay, let's talk about the size and about where, how many legs does it have and how fast is it going to be doing that. And because we really wanted it in episode 5, where the creature starts this big like chase scene, we really wanted to try to hammer out some more. The creature, like, the longer the episode goes, the more things we have to add to the creature that end up defining it in some way. So the sound of its footsteps and how many it has and how quick. I'm like, well, now we're painting a size thing for it. Like, right. How hard do they crash? It also is footsteps can suck from an audio point. Like, oh my God.
They do.
It's so hard.
You know what your sound is that you're looking for more often than not, and no sound effect quite gets it. And then you end up having to do it yourself.
Just like, boy, Googling sound things is a fucking wasteland, man. Like, never have I had a larger collection of unhelpful keywords than when I'm trying to find something. So, yes. You know, depending on, you know, and this kind of falls into a budget thing, is that sometimes it's, okay, this is really what we want, but we don't have the space or the gear to like make a lot of this stuff. So it might just be like, okay, well, this is the noise that I can get from a sound library. I can do stuff to it, but like, this is the closest thing that we have. So now let's edit that out. Because a lot of the time you even want like, okay, well, I got a 1 foot stomp noise, but I only got one good one. And the creature has 4 legs, and each one of those should sound slightly different. So you're not just hearing the same, like 1, 2, 3, 4. So now I gotta like mess around with EQ stuff to give like enough variation in 4 different footsteps that it doesn't just sound like someone beating a drum over and over. It was a lot.
I have always been curious because I've been the writer and the sound designer, and knowing that you two are obviously 2 different people, spoiler alert, everybody, they are 2 different people, but having the perception of the writer and then having the reality of the sound designer. So obviously you approve and you're now in agreement on where everything stands, but I was just curious as to how that all went down.
Yeah. By and large, we know what the other person sort of means, though there have been a couple of exceptions. There was a particular metal door noise that he read what I wrote, and you know, I was not specific enough, or I didn't leave a correct marginal note, whatever it may have been, and came up with something that was perfectly good, but a very different vibe from what I was going for. You know, it's like, oh no, I wanted like a big heavy garage door, and he had done like a fire door, or whatever, like the
yeah.
You know, it was a thing. And that's not Derek's fault. That's my fault. That's just, you know, it is something that every so often, not but remarkably infrequently, we do run into this kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I just punish Derek and I say things like insert pastry placement noise here.
Right. Sometimes sound notes are helpful, other times it's less than.
So I listened to a podcast called Script Notes with John August and Craig Mazin. They're major screenwriters in Hollywood, and they frequently talk about directing on the page, and some directors are not a fan of the screenwriters directing on the page, giving all these small notes, and then some other directors, and that helps them. And then me being the writer and sound designer, I've already listened to the episode before it's even ever been put into audio form. Mm-hmm. So then I just manipulate it to sound like what it is that I'm looking for. But with the 2 different people, that's just an interesting connection that you two have. Actually, yeah.
On the plus side, having both of us means that like we can often divide resources. Like, well, when Jake finishes writing an episode, well, he can pass it off to me to look over. And then while I'm making drafts of it, he can do whatever he wants. Like he can start on other episodes. Like the same thing, because it's not just the physical, you make the show and then you got to promote the show and social media about the show and then Patreon, and having any form of division of labor with that turns into like, well, it's not just one person who's doing everything, but because it's not one person, it also means that like we are just going, we might interpret the same words differently because Jake knows what things are supposed to sound like, and I'm just going, you said door. It said door here. I gave you a door. So
let's... So you can take it outside.
Back to SoundSnap library keyword searches. I'm kind of smooth brained about things. So like we had a thing where we're looking for a Westminster chime. And I was like, I don't know what the fuck that is. Jake, what is that noise? And he was like, doorbell. I didn't know that.
What? I didn't, yeah, that means
wasn't one of those fancy people who grew up having a doorbell. I guess this is where it's really.
Love it. So let me ask you guys, as far as October's Children is concerned, do you have another season in mind, or is it done as it stands, or what's the plan with this? Or is it too early to say?
No, we've had conversations for up to season 3 already.
A lot of it boils down to finances, though. It's mm-hmm. sort of how does the Patreon and the I don't know if we're going to do another Indiegogo or something like that, but Derek's the producer, and Derek has been doing a lot of this, all of this, out of his own pocket, you know. And because we do firmly believe that the actors deserve to be paid, that means that there's a finite amount of stuff we can do before we have to ask the community for help.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if everything goes perfectly, I think we have 3 seasons of the show. What we'll end up doing is, because season two and three haven't been written, so we're talking about like, all right, well, how can we write a show? And by we, I mean I just be like, Jacob, how can you write a show that potentially could, you know, end at 2 or go to 3, and does that change the ending of 1 if 2 has to have a finite or like a potential. So yeah, we've talked so much about it. So like if you really like the show, give us $1 on Patreon, and it just goes to making these conversations way easier. because I'll be moving to be with my wife in the United Kingdom by the end of this year. So that's going to be a huge job change. So we'll see where finances land and then go from there, and then see if we're still have enough money to throw blocks of cash at podcasts.
Well, at least then you have you just pay in euros, so it'll be cheaper, right? That's how that works.
We could do that's it. We can go to season 5 now. Everyone's gonna start getting paid
pounds and
John, you cracked the code.
Perfect. That's what I'm here for. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, guys, thank you so much for having been on. We're going to close it out. Jacob and Derek, tell the listeners where they can follow you if you want them to follow you. And we'll have played by now the first episode so that people can hear what it is that you made. And hopefully they'll go to episode 2 and then on and on. But yeah, how does everybody follow you?
How do people follow you, Jake?
Why are you asking me? I'm the Luddite.
Because yours is a much shorter conversation.
Go to our website. Thank you.
Yes.
What is your website?
October's Children Podcast.captivate.fm. I need to make a nicer one, but you can also find us pretty much anywhere. If you like the show, please leave us a review about them. We post all of our reviews directly to our cast, and we love seeing people enjoy the show. You can find us on Twitter at OCT Children Pod, Instagram, Facebook. I have a TikTok. I don't really like using TikTok, but hypothetically, there is a TikTok there. If you go back far enough, there are some pretty cringy first early attempts at me trying to TikTok. Maybe you're into that thing. I don't know.
We're on YouTube now, aren't we?
We have a YouTube. If you would like to listen to our stuff from there, it's a little bit behind on episodes because I find that no one so far has really listened to it. If you like the show, check us out on Patreon. We offer behind the scenes content. We do Q&As for each episode, and probably starting in a week or two, we'll start October's Children clothing and hats and phone cases and stuff. And you can get some good discount codes if you're supporting us on Patreon. Yes. You can also just send a money order directly to me and Jake. Just paid to the, it's just title it season 2, season 3. Just that's it. Sugar daddy us on our way there. I'll be super appreciative.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Guys, do you have anything else to add, or did we cover it all, or tell me something really interesting before we close this out? I know you're on the spot.
Never appease tyrants.
Never appease triants.
Triants, really? Really?
Yeah. Our first draft of merch, I ordered a sample and I had spelled tyrants wrong on the back.
I hadn't heard that. That's amazing.
Yes, that's where it came up, because I had made so many pieces of merch in one day that I just, some of them say never appease tyrants, and the hoodie, the $50 hoodie that I ordered that Kaya, my wife, is now wearing in the United Kingdom, says October's Children on the back. It says never appease triants.
That's phenomenal.
That's amazing. Well, thanks. On that note, guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us. This was a lot of fun.
If you haven't been following us on social media yet, we are on the socials. Come join us. Ask us questions. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Go follow the guys from October's Children as well. They are amazing, as you can probably tell. Anyway, thank you for listening to today's episode with the guys from October's Children. And we at Mercury Theater Podcast will be back shortly with something new. In the meantime, I'm John Badger.
Now what?